Hey everybody, and welcome to Two Out the First. It is February 27th, 2024. We are nearly to the end of February, and that is kind of wild to me. But we still got 2 days left in the month. We got a leap day to cover as well. And we're going to talk about a couple of things today on the show. Thanks for being here. We are presented by our friends at Swannies. Check them out, swannies.co. Use the promo code GolfNewsNet25. Save 25% off your first order. Now, today's show centers around something very stupid said by Taylor Gooch. And it just kind of popped into my timeline this morning thanks to Shane Bacon, who read this story from Golf Digest Australia. I don't know if it's cross-published with Golf Digest in the U.S., but Golf Digest Australia is a separate publication, has its own things. It's not all the same stuff from Digest. And they do a good job down there. There are a number of reporters who are over here covering golf, and they do a great job. So Shane took a screen capture of a piece of the story, and it's a conversation with Taylor Gooch of some kind. Maybe it's from the LIV Golf event this week in Jeddah. I'm not entirely certain. I didn't dig far enough down the rabbit hole, I'm going to be honest with you about this, because I saw it and went, well, I mean, I know he can say something that's stupid, so I don't really need to dig much deeper than this. He said some dumb stuff before, so I don't need to question the authenticity of it, blah, 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 blah. And besides, it's from Golf Digest Australia, so it's a reputable publication. So there's, Gooch is this guy who's prone to running his mouth. I mean, he was the guy who said, this feels like a Ryder Cup at the LIV Portland event. And you're like, they're not even close, man. Like, and I think he kind of understood, after getting roasted mercilessly about that maybe he was a little too excited to be in at LIV and, have the four aces thing going for him or whatever it was. I think that was the initial season, the initial invitational series season. And the quote from him relating to this story today is about Augusta National and this kind of, it's like the eighth or ninth wave of LIV golfers and Greg Norman on behalf of LIV golfers getting mad that they don't get world ranking points and that not enough of their players are getting into the majors and blah, 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 blah. And Gooch is trying to make the case that more LIV players should just get invitations to major championships. And I think it's meant to be kind of based on whatever depth of their points list, that they want to try to put out there. And some are like, Bubba's more like, I want like 12, and some of them are like, I want 10 or 5, something like that. And Gooch, who is a good player on LIV, he's won several times on LIV. He's been there, they're kind of breakout player, really. But he's also been not good in full field events with a cut that plays 72 holes. I mean, last year he was atrocious in two majors, didn't attempt to qualify for another, and I think it was T34, T33 at the Masters, which is not a horrible showing, but definitely not a great one either. And he's talking about this idea that more LIV golfers need to get invited. He says, quote, if Rory McIlroy goes and completes his Grand Slam, the career Grand Slam, without some of the best players in the world, there's just going to be an asterisk. It's just the reality. I think everybody wins whenever the majors figure out a way to get the best players in the world there. End quote. All right, let's just start with the asterisk thing. There are no asterisks in winning majors. There are zero of them. There's never been one. There's never going to be one. We still count old Tom Morris beating like 12 other people, 11 of them might have been drunk while they were playing, in the Open Championship. We didn't take those away from him because golf was different and much harder then, because you hit with a ball stuffed with feathers from a goose you probably had to track down yourself, kill, pluck, and then stuff the feathers into the leather ball and stitch it yourself. And then somehow you had to shave hickory shafts and wrap them with leather from an animal you also probably had to kill. And that's why we don't just put an asterisk around that, even though he didn't beat a whole lot of people. Or that they played three 12-hole rounds, and that was a 36-hole event. You went, oh, man, That should be an asterisk too. They didn't play a full 72. We don't do any of those things. We don't do that around history. No one goes, oh, well, all those PGA championships that were won when it was a match play thing, yeah, those deserve an asterisk too, because match play can be super random. They don't do that for the Masters in the years where they didn't invite African-American players, even when they could have initially. That doesn't happen. There's no asterisks around the years Tiger didn't play, or Arnie didn't play, or Jack couldn't play, whether they were injured or whatever. We don't have asterisks for those things. So there's not going to be an asterisk because Taylor freaking Gooch wasn't invited to the Masters. There's just no way around that. And there are some people that could have a case, not only on LIV, but on the PGA Tour and even the DP World Tour, for a Masters invite, given the way that they have played in terms of gaining strokes on their field or fields and their competitors. But you don't get the same quotes from them. You know, go, well, a good example from the No Laying Up guys, because they looked at Data Golf's rankings, which I don't really fully agree with, by the way. I have different methodology in ranking players. We talk about that on the Golf Gambling podcast. But even if you took their ranking at face value, and they have good data, they have a sound methodology, I just disagree with it. But they've got Christian Bezuidenhout in the world top 50, and no one, you know, he's not parading himself around going, man, I really wish there was a better system for this. The simple answer is, for everybody, is play better. The different answer for LIV is, you knew what you were signing up for. You knew what you were getting into. You knew you weren't going to get the kind eye of the golf world. You knew you weren't going to get world ranking points, at least initially, even if, as Carlos Ortiz's story might hold up of, well, they told us we were going to get, they promised us we were going to get points, then we didn't get points. Well, too bad, so sad. You knew you were signing up for the possibility of a long duration, a long, complicated situation where you might not get points. That's what the money's for. And there were times back in the 80s, especially before the world ranking came out, and really that was a marketing tool back then. It became something legitimate. It was originally a marketing tool. But the idea that the best players in Europe weren't easily getting into the Masters because they had to be invited. There weren't criteria to support the European Tour in the same way that had come along in the years after. And even then, that was still kind of sparse. But you could have argued that the Masters was missing some of the best players in the world in the 80s, particularly in the early 80s. And yet, Seve still got through. Bernhard Langer still got through. Jose Maria Olazabal, Ian Woosnam, those guys still got through. So I don't think you can even make that argument with a straight face. And maybe Gooch, and I did not see a video around this, so I don't know the context in which he's trying to deliver this. Is this meant to be sophomoric? Is this meant to be in jest? I don't think it is, because of the way he has talked in the past about trying to get into major championships for LIV players. But I don't think he speaks understanding really anything about the history of the game, about the history of the majors. You know, this idea that there were exemption criteria out the wazoo for different tours and different carve-outs and all that stuff, this is a relatively new phenomenon. I mean, the Masters used to have, all right, past champions get in, you know, top 8, 12, whatever, 16 from the prior year, and then PGA Tour winners got in, and then they took that away for a while, and that was weird. And then they went to the OWGR, and then they've kind of balanced that out a little bit by, you know, a win gets you back in. They don't do that for any other tour because they can do whatever the heck they want. They can decide whatever matters the most. They invited Joaquin Niemann, among others, two others that were invited with special invitations because they've done well in their respective tours. Niemann has done well in LIV, yes. But he also won the Australian Open. So he won an important tournament in the golf pantheon, so to speak. Taylor Gooch has not done that. He's won, what, the RSM Classic? Hey, nothing wrong with that. But that's it outside of LIV. And I think the Masters would probably want to say to the universe of LIV players, if you can win outside of LIV and on LIV, Maybe that's meriting an invitation. Maybe a Louis Oosthuizen kind of guy. Won twice on the DP World Tour back-to-back. He didn't get an invitation. Dean Burmester, same thing. Back-to-back on the DP World Tour. Did not get an invitation. And I don't think... Louis Oosthuizen said that he is resigned to the fact that he may never play the majors again. Like, he got his one chance. He won in his blowout at St. Andrews, and that's probably going to be it. Dean Burmester, I've not seen anything publicly. I mean, he also is kind of, I think, views himself maybe a little bit differently, perhaps, at least publicly speaking. But, I mean, he's more deserving, frankly, of an invitation. You know, if you're going to go win back-to-back and you're very few starts outside of your LIV golf circuit, I think you made the most of them, right? What about the players who play well on the Asian tour when they do the international series stuff? There's some case to be made for that. But I don't think anyone could look at this statement and not chuckle, right? There's no seriousness to be taken there. Now, your counter to that is, well, McIlroy said himself at Pebble Beach that he would prefer to have beaten, you know, the best players in the world. He would prefer to have beaten a Jon Rahm or Dustin Johnson type player to win a trophy. And I think that's a reasonable thing to say about the Pebble Beach tournament, because Rahm and DJ are in the Masters. They're going to be there forever. They both won. And you're going to have your Bryson. You're going to have your Brooks Koepka, Cam Smith. You're going to have a Tyrrell Hatton. You're going to have those players who signed because they've won majors. They've earned the right to be in every major for 5 years. If, you know, if they won the Masters for life, if they won a U.S. Open, it was 10 years. If they won an Open, it's life, PGA life, but they get the others for five. They've earned that right. And that's predominantly the players who took the money. They're not complaining. They know they're in. They don't need to talk about, well, we need more LIV players in these tournaments. They're already in. They knew it when they made that choice. Just the same as the players who took the money knowing they would probably not get world ranking points, at least initially. They would fall hard out of the rankings. They'd have at least a year without the points, maybe more, maybe the duration of their LIV contract, and then they would have to go figure out what to do, whether they want to choose to pursue U.S. Open qualifying paths, whether they want to try Open qualifying for the Open Championship, which admittedly is a very tough road, but those were your options. That was what was laid on the table in front of you, and you made your choice. Live with it. Live with it. You know, Taylor Gooch, from what I've been told, made his choices going to LIV thinking he would get right back on the PGA Tour, that, you know, he could do whatever he had to do, make his money, and go back to the PGA Tour. And obviously that didn't work out because he was immediately suspended. And I don't think he thought that was going to happen. And now he's obviously gotten into a position where it's turned out pretty well for him on LIV in terms of finances and trophies. You know, it is what it is. He's the poster child for a guy, middling guy that went to LIV and made something of it, other than maybe Dean Burmester. You know, Anirban Lahiri's had some moments, perhaps. So all of that to say, with the approach that LIV players take and Greg Norman takes to just kind of every couple of months, every whatever amount of time, complaining about the world ranking, complaining that LIV players don't get in more events. When you have to produce a system that explains to people why LIV players are competitive and why they should be involved in these tournaments, give them baseline figures, give them numbers, make a case publicly that isn't just, well, why aren't we in? You know, Norman's case looked at the OWGR, looked at Data Golf's ranking, looked at two other very flawed systems, the SI World Golf Ranking, which is horrible and makes no sense, and the Ultimate Golf Ranking, TUGR, which is really just the Sagarin ranking, but done worse. And those systems, the SI World Golf Ranking, really doesn't make any sense at all in terms of the context of how golf is played whatsoever, because it's like distance per shot, which is the dumbest metric you could have possibly come up with to try to compare LIV and the PGA Tour, primarily because there wasn't enough data from LIV, and the shot per distance per shot doesn't really mean anything. It doesn't mean anything in golf. And then the Ultimate Golf Ranking, which is also terrible because it compares players on a head-to-head basis. And golf is not played head-to-head, not at this level. It's not match play. It's not, you know, knockout play. There's none of that. And that's why the Sagarin ranking doesn't work either, by the way. They both don't work. That's why you get the Sagarin ranking where, like, Russell Henley's the 10th best player in the world. You're like, nope, he's not. And we all know he's not. So stop saying that. If you look at the systems, your closest bet is data golf, and data golf also tends to kind of look at a long-term smoothing. They're not looking at highs and lows like the official World Golf Ranking is set to do. I'm not saying one's better than the other between those two, because the data golf ranking really prioritizes players who play consistently over time, and that can lead to results where you go like, Christian Bezuidenhout's a top 50 player in the world. There's no one says that. No one believes that. But at the same time, same with like a Russell Henley. Like, he's won 4 times on the PGA Tour. That's lovely. He's never had but one top 5 in a major. You know he's not one of the 20 best players in the world. But you also have in the OWGR system where even if LIV were getting points, and they would zero out, generally speaking, which would be weird, but it's based on now strokes gained world ranking, like what you bring to the table. So it's not that dissimilar now from the data golf system. You just get bigger spikes for winning in terms of the points you're awarded. So there's a consequence for strokes gained as opposed to the data golf system, which is really more about strokes gained pure and then relative to your competition, which I'm generally more on board with in trying to rank golfers than, oh, they won, they must be suddenly much better, because winning is a random event and stuff like that. So I'll bring it all back to say, if you're going to try to complain, if you're LIV and you're LIV players and you're Greg Norman, it is they want something. They want the PR of having something to complain about. They don't want the actual solution, because then if you're just like, all right, well, we'll just invite your top 5 players. Well, if you looked at their top 5 players from last year, and I don't have the points list in front of me, and I really don't very much care, but if you're looking at, here, I'm going to do the actual work here and pull this thing up. So let's say 2023. So the top 5 players on LIV last year: Taylor Gooch, Cam Smith, Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau, Dustin Johnson. If you invited all of them, if you had a top 5 thing, you're like, the top 5 players on LIV got invited. The only guy who's not in the Masters now is Taylor Gooch, which is why he wants to be invited. He wants that metric to be there, because all the other players, they actually won majors, so they're in the majors. And if you looked at 2022, just out of curiosity, now they only had 8 events, right? So that this doesn't really mean a whole lot. But you had Dustin Johnson, Brandon Grace, Peter Uihlein, Patrick Reed, and Charles Schwartzel. Schwartzel gets in the Masters, he won it, although he's not playing well at all now. Patrick Reed's marginal these days. Peter Uihlein's playing well, but he wasn't particularly 2 years ago. And Brandon Grace had a nice run. You know, he won an event on LIV, but that was an 8-event year. If you're looking this year, 2024, you got Dustin Johnson, Joaquin Neiman, John Rahm, Taylor Gooch, Sergio Garcia. Well, how about that? No wonder Taylor Gooch wants that top 5 thing, because he would then get invited again. Guess who's also in the Masters? Everybody else on that list, because Joaquin Neiman got invited and Sergio Garcia is a Masters champion. So, yes, always think about why someone says what they say, but then just try to understand. I'm reasonable. I'm trying to understand someone's argument. Give me data. Explain to me why. Explain to me why. Don't just go, oh, these guys are all in the ranking. I know why those ranking systems suck. Give me your data that explains it. And if you can, make the argument. If you can't, shut up. All right. Second story today. I do want to talk a little bit about the match from last night. I didn't get to watch a whole ton of it. Would have liked to, but my son had basketball practice, and that's frankly a priority over an exhibition, just being honest with you. But cool that they play it under the lights. I like the under the lights thing. I wish more things were done under the lights. I wish there was an under the lights tournament. And I know Liv has kind of thrown that idea out there. It would be one of their better gimmicks, because at least there would still be a competition there, even if it's played at night and a little bit different, right? But I did like the under the lights stuff. I thought Lexi stood out. She was fun and interesting. And I feel like her public persona is very awkward, because she wants to have this image that she's a tremendous athlete, a beautiful woman, doing it all, having it all, but also wants to be treated with kid gloves. She doesn't want the criticism that comes with being a superior athlete. It comes with being one of the best in the world. And so when things go wrong, she's like, how dare you, or huffs and puffs, and or doesn't do interviews, and those things, they can't coexist very well. But when you put her in an environment when she's very comfortable and not subject to any kind of criticism, it's quite charming. It's quite interesting. And I wish there would be more of her like that, that just kind of could accept the fact that there were weighty expectations on her for 20 years, basically, and that she did what she won a major. There's nothing wrong with it. You know, that she did break through. Now, is that as good as she could have done? I don't know. I mean, a couple of U.S. Women's Opens got away from her. Some other tournaments got a women's PGA got away from her. Does that mean she's a failure? No, it just means she only won one major. And just kind of embrace the fact, like, look, I'm a fully fledged adult who has a fully fledged life, and I just want to have fun for the rest of my career. It looked like so much of last year where she was miserable and didn't want to be out there. And I totally understand that. The life of a professional golfer, while potentially extremely lucrative, also can be really lonely and sad, because you travel from place to place. You play an individual sport. I don't care if you the live thing. I'm not making that point. But you play an individual sport. You have your people that you're surrounded with. When it all goes wrong, you can't lean on them. They can't help you. They can't make you. They can't play for you. They could give you advice. They can calm you down. They can talk to you. They can distract you. They can do those things, but they can't play the golf for you. And your entire livelihood, and typically there are several of those people's livelihoods, also relies on your performance. And when it all goes wrong, it's not fun. It'll beat you up and make you feel terrible. Ask Patty Tavitanikin how bad it's been. And you have to fight and claw and find something in yourself that convinces you this is something worth doing, even though you have convinced yourself time and time again this is the thing you wanted the most in the world. And then you go out there and you put up bad scores and you play bad and you're like, I don't want to do this anymore. Forget this. I'd love to do anything else but that. And if she could just kind of embrace, look, a lot of people want her to do well. A lot of people root for her. Embrace that, be open to that, but also realize there are people that you're never going to convince you're good enough. And that's true throughout all facets of life. They're just people you're never going to convince you're good, you're capable, you're special, or whatever you want to prove. That's it. If she can embrace that, I think this version of her would be really fun to watch. And maybe one that wins more majors, because she wouldn't clam up as much. But like, hey, forget it. I've done what I'm going to do. Did you do that? No. Okay. Rose Zhang's fantastic. She's wonderful. I hope she has a great follow-up year this year. It's really hard to do what she did and follow it up. And I think she's kind of eased into the year a little bit. Let's see what happens as we get into the meat of the LPGA season and gets back into the United States after the winter Asian swing. And we'll see what happens. But I really like her. Max Homa is awesome. I mean, he's brilliant, easy to talk to. Just a guy that's kind of built for this type of thing. And then have Charles Barkley a part of it. I know he loves golf. He's not a golf broadcaster. But man, he's so good at the interpersonal stuff. Like being able to make fun of people and letting people make fun of themselves a little bit. Being able to make fun of himself too. It all works. It's all very good. I wish that there were better promotion around this stuff now. Like you have these matches and they just kind of sneak up on you. And I totally forgotten this thing was happening until I got emails about it yesterday. And I still have my son's basketball schedule. That was going to happen regardless. But I would have talked about it more. I would have cared about it more had I got a better idea of that was coming. I think that's part of the problem of doing these matches with Turner Sports, TNT Sports. They do them very well, but the amount of promotion for them is negligible, it feels like, compared, you know, to the golf audience, because they don't broadcast golf regularly. So it's not like Golf Channel and NBC, obviously the same umbrella. It's not like ESPN or CBS are going to bust out promos for these things. They're just not. So the average golfer or golf fan doesn't even really know they're happening until maybe they see it on social media. There's, you know, if they're watching on TV or in an app, scrolling a programming guide, you go, oh, that's on. I'll watch that. I wish there were more promotion for that, but I'm really happy that they had LPGA players and PGA Tour players together, men and women competing with one another. I would like to see more of that. Use this platform, use this kind of very limited player platform on these nights, these Monday nights, these Tuesday night events, to promote as much golf en masse as possible. Have one with players who play for the G4D Tour. They're going to have their first Golf for the Disabled Tour event in the U.S. this year on the PGA Tour, I think maybe around the Nelson. That's really cool. Let's use that as an opportunity to showcase that adaptive golf. Promote the U.S. Adaptive Open. Promote the U.S. Disabled Golf Championship. You know, there's all kinds of different ways these platforms can be used for good and still have world-class players part of it that are names, right? Rory McIlroy's a star. Max Homa's lesser of a star, but still a star. Lexi Thompson's a known commodity in golf circles. Rose Zhang is a quickly rising name in golf. And yet all of them got a little bit of rub off of McIlroy last night, being in this primetime position. McIlroy winds up winning. He had what amount to a chip-off to determine the winner of the skins game. I like the format. I'm cool with it. More of this, please. And I'm still going to pine for a mixed event, a mixed official event. It can be kind of like the Scandinavian mixed, where you have men and women competing in the same tournament off different sets of tees. You could have it more like the Vic Open, where you have, or the Australian Open now, where you have kind of a golf festival. You have men and women competing in separate tournaments for equal prize money. I'm cool with that. I just think it would be a great opportunity, and that has not been taken care of yet is surprising. But I do think that with the Strategic Sports Group, and namely Fenway Sports Group, being involved with this investment of the PGA Tour, they are also a marketing partner for the LPGA, and I am certain they are already spinning the wheels, or have been spinning the wheels, on trying to have a mixed event for both tours to come together. I hope that happens. Hope it happens in the next couple of years. It is an opportunity right now in golf. Women's sports are on the rise. That's just the reality of it. And more people are watching women's sports. More people are open to watching women's sports than ever before. And I think that's an opportunity that isn't passing the LPGA by, but it's not getting the same kind of level of underlying support from golf in full. And it needs that. It can benefit from that. So I hope that's coming soon. All right, that's going to do it for us today on the show. Thanks so much for spending some time with me. I appreciate it. We'll be back tomorrow with another show. If you have any questions, email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. I'm on Twitter, Threads, X, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Ryan Balogie. I'm on Facebook and YouTube at Ryan Balogie Golf. We'll talk to you tomorrow on 2 off the 1st.